ring if you're ready to care.
What is up, everybody? It is your boy, We2Deep. We are back with another special episode of the Slapping Meat Wrestling Podcast. This is episode 290. We are 10 away from 300. What a spectacular even thing to even say. 290 episodes right now. That's wonderful. Thank you to all who've been day one followers and listeners of the show. If you're new here, we welcome you as well. Here's to the next 290 episodes, if not more, of this podcast. I made this commitment about a month ago now, right? That we're gonna do this show on three R's, right? And that's being real, that's being raw, that's being irrelevant, right? And I really want to stand on that, especially with how I'm going to break down the two shows from last night, right? So we had Worlds Collide. We had Money in the Bank, right? We're going to break those down and talk about them, spending a little bit more time with Money in the Bank than with Worlds Collide. I'll be completely honest with you, but before we get there, as always, like, share, subscribe. If you're on YouTube, if you're on audio podcast, you can still like, you can still share, you can still subscribe, follow, leave us a review, preferably 5 stars if you enjoyed it. If you don't enjoy the show, I still want to hear that feedback. Let me know what you guys think. The best way you can do that and the best way you can join the conversation is by joining the Slapping Meat show and its fans in the Real Wrestling Community Discord. Link will be in the description. Do not miss that. As well as we do have a breakdown in the leaderboard. If you're in the Discord, right, one of the perks is we run some interactive things there. Me, James, and Cody from Beyond the Junkyard, we try to run as much interaction as we can with the community as it's growing. So I'm running the 2K brackets. That first round video is up now. I'm sure most of you have already seen it. Had some difficulties with scheduling, getting me and Wavy D on the first round. Going forward, we will do the second. So there's basically, we're down to the final four teams. So we're going to do, there's three matches remaining, and those three matches will be posted sometime this week. And the way we're going to do that, right, I'm going to go ahead and break this down. The way we're going to do that, I'm going to previously record the matches, right? And then what I'm going to do is having pre-recorded the matches, I'm going to upload them to the software that I use to record. We will freely, we will get on here, and it will basically be a live reaction. So this will be live, possibly on Saturday. That's probably going to be the best time to do it. I got to work out the details with Wavy D. Possibly like a Saturday night thing where everyone in the community can join into the chat and watch the matches live as me and Wavy D, you know, do a live commentary of it. But that's out there. And then the other thing we're interactive with that you can do by joining the Discord is the pay-per-view predictions or PLE predictions for WWE and for AEW shows. Those have been updated. Wavy D did bring up a solid question yesterday. So we are going, we, I take your guys' advice that you guys bring to me as a solid question. Are we going to go by record? Are we going to go by percentage of right? And if we're going to go by percentage, is there going to be a threshold? So to break that down a little bit more for you guys who are in the Discord or who are going to join, how that works, we are going to go by the percentage of total correct picks. So the first rule of that is you have to have predicted at least 50% of all the matches wrestled during the time that we're doing this. So far, everyone has met that threshold that has participated, right? You have to have predicted at least 50% of the matches wrestled. What that essentially means is even if you don't watch AEW or if you don't watch WWE, just put a prediction for the matches, right? For the most part, you know, it would be better for you to get the prediction. I feel like most shows, even though shows try to be unpredictable, I think with logic and reasoning, and we'll go into that a little bit more, with logic and reasoning, it makes sense that you can just put a prediction out there. You meet that threshold, and then the highest predicted, right? So Cody's leading the – so first off, there's 25 matches so far that you could have predicted. Cody missed World's End, which is fine, but he's done all the other shows. So 20 matches predicted. He's hitting 75% correct. Second place is B-Master at 71%. Third place is James at 64%. Witters and Highlander are sitting at 63%. Kara's at 60%. And then me and Wavy D are rounding up the back, tied at 56%. So that's that leaderboard there. So that's all the fun stuff. Let's break down these shows. So we'll start with Worlds Collide because that's where the night, afternoon/night, you know, that's where it began. Overall, this was a fun 2 hours of wrestling. And I don't remember if I said this in the Discord or if this was with a private conversation I was having with someone outside of the Discord, where I said this was a warm-up show that was specifically done for two audiences. The Latino, Hispanic, sort of Mexican audience, the Lucha Libre audience in Mexico. But it was also for the marks. It's for the hardcore, more hardcore wrestling fan, right? So, like, I'm very interested into seeing how these people who are, you know, if it's not in WWE, it's not on my radar, who watched the show and are going to mark out over, oh, I'm enjoying this, right? I know exactly how this is going to play. I've called this out before. I personally feel that I am the realest podcaster in the game. What do I mean by that? I'm going to tell you how I feel, and I'm not going to try to do it for likes and clicks and money. And then these people are like, oh, well, I don't make very much doing. The point is you're trying to build a brand out of it. Do I want Slap and Meat Wrestling? Do I want it to be a successful podcast? Yes. Success to me, though, isn't money and advertisement and getting on WWE programming. No, success for me, what's the purpose? Because what's the purpose? How do I define success? The purpose for me is that Slapping Meat Wrestling is a place where me and like-minded individuals can freely discuss their thoughts on the show. And I don't feel a lot of programs and communities out there, even if they promote themselves as it, I don't feel a lot of people execute that right. I feel that the real wrestling community, that Slapping Meat Wrestling, what me and James try to produce, and Cody, what we're trying to make here is a place where wrestling fans can be their authentic self and have their authentic opinions. And that includes us as we're doing the podcast, right? And so what we have a lot, and so even guys like JD that I've really started listening to, and I respect JD, right? But JD comes out here and oh, if you have this opinion and it differs from mine, well, JD's obviously trying to make money. Sean Ross Sapp is trying to make money. everyone, I feel like a lot of people in the in this space, in this industry, they're just in it to make money. I'm not. I don't care if I see a single cent come back to me. This is success to me, is being able to facilitate conversation. So in that, in the 290 episodes that are being done, this one being 290, I feel like I have done that. I have facilitated conversations. And so to me, we are successful. Now, would I like this to be monetarily successful? Absolutely. It would bring me great pleasure if someday this could be the job that the thing that I get to do for a living. If I could sustain myself and pay bills and live off of podcasting, I would absolutely love to do that. Right. If whether that mean, and everyone, like, I've always had this thought, like, if AEW walked up to me and said, "Hey man, we want you, we want to sponsor your podcast. We want you to work for us and run like an AEW podcast or something," would I do it? Here's a show. Or if, you know, even a company like Fightful, I'm not the biggest fan of Fightful, right? If Fightful came to me and said, "We like your show, we want to put you on our network, here's how we will pay you," would I do it? Absolutely. If the money's right and the situations are right, there'll be some requirements. Like, I still have to be able to be real, raw, and relevant and not change right? I want to own my show. I don't want to, you know, so it would have to be a partnership, not where I work for Fightful, but that they partner with me and they pay me for it, but I own the show. Like, Fightful is not going to be able to own it, right? Stuff like that, right? If I hit the lottery, right, and I would create this would be a realistic podcast network with me, James Cody. You know, I've already even contemplated, like, you know, Wavy D would get a show to do whatever he wants. Like, this would be an entertainment network, right? But I realize that while that may be a dream and that may be a fantasy, that may not be realistic. And so I understand that. But if I can, right, I don't expect to earn money doing this. I do this for two reasons. One, to facilitate conversation among like-minded people who have the same interest in pro wrestling that I do, but also as a place for me to do what I'm going to do on this episode, and that's vent, but also talk out. Because there's not a lot of people on a day-to-day basis that I do have the opportunity to talk pro wrestling about with, right? Outside of the Discord community. That's why I love it so much. But this is a place where I get to speak out and work through what I feel and what my opinions are on this beautiful entertainment thing called pro wrestling, right? And so I do keep it real. Guys, I do enjoy this show. And I know a lot of people are like, "Well, that's very different than how you were." No. I've never once critiqued other styles as far as how they wrestle, right? Strong style is for people. There are fans of strong style. You have the right to like strong style. All of my, you know, this, the Lucha Libre style, very unique, very different than WWE style. That's never right. And I've never delegitimized the styles. This is still wrestling. What I've said is that wrestling in America, like the pro wrestling in America, is the most marketable style. It's the most known style of pro wrestling, and that WWE and on an extent AEW being American companies, they like this style is the most important because it's the largest market in the industry, right? But I've never delegitimized the other styles. And here's what this is. This solely is, and what I liked was that Conan mentioned it before the first match started, that this may not be for you. This is Lucha Libre. It's different. Excuse me. It's different, right? And he lowered that expectation. And so going into that, I already knew this would be different because it's AAA. It's Lucha Libre. It's right. And I thoroughly enjoyed everything in this match. Right. And this is one of the rare occasions, and I think I said this in a private conversation with someone, where I wasn't necessarily focused on the storyline, because, and I'm going to give the same benefit to like when AEW does Forbidden Door, storylines shouldn't necessarily matter in those type events, because it's solely a showcase. And they mentioned this a lot. Corey Graves and Conan mentioned this a lot on the show. This is a showcase of Lucha Libre to a wider, broader audience. Now, with that being said, absolutely, I thoroughly do agree that WWE is going to mass market this as Lucha Libre, but they are going to Americanize it. They are going to change it a little bit, I do believe, into the WWE style. I thoroughly do believe that. With that being said, there's not much that I really want to talk about from a match standpoint. What I want to talk about with Worlds Collide is I had fun. This was fun to watch, right? This was thoroughly the first time this year in 2025 where I watched a wrestling event and just had fun, right? Things that I probably historically would have hated on, like Mr. Iguana. This dude was the most over dude probably of the weekend. Mr. Iguana was great. This gimmick, and here's the thing, it's the little things, right? So he's playing an iguana, right? And so what is he? There'll be times throughout the match and throughout promos where he'll just be sitting there talking, and then he'll go and like lick his tongue like an iguana does, right? Or he was in an interview and he was asked, like, what is your most fear? Like, what's one of your biggest fears? And his answer was grasshoppers, right? Because iguanas are kind of known of being scared of grasshoppers, right? Because grasshoppers fight back. But it's that commitment to the gimmick is what I enjoy about him, right? And the stuffed animal puppet, it's funny, it's good. I think it's definitely. But here's the thing, Lucha Libre is fun. That's what is known. The style is known for is being fun, entertainment. There's gimmicks, right? And I just thoroughly. There's not much more I could say. I thoroughly enjoyed this. There were two matches that really surprised me. I did very bad at predicting this thing. I got the first three matches wrong, right? So the first match was Mr. Iguana, Octagon, and Aerostar versus LWO. And I assumed with this being the match Rey Mysterio was supposed to be in until I think he got hurt or knocked out. And I know Joaquin, I don't know how the fuck you say it. I think he got knocked out on Monday in a match with Lexus King, so they canceled him. So that's why Lince Dorado was in the match, I believe. I don't know if they told that story, but that's what I believe happened. First off, Cruz del Toro showed out in this match, right? And Conan was very right to. He called this out two or three times where he's like, I haven't seen Cruz del Toro wrestle this way in a while. Bro, Cruz del Toro, and this is my thing, man. This is what really annoys me is the Cruz del Toro and Wild are actually very, very good wrestlers. And I felt like I feel like even Dragon Lee, like the LWO stuff is really holding them down. Right? I thoroughly do believe that. And they got the show out here, and it's wonderful. I did think LWO was going to win this. And so because of that, that's why I picked Legado to lose. And the reason I thought Legado, so me and James, like, because when James picked Legado to win, I was like, well, that's an interesting choice, right? And me and him had the same thought pattern that one WWE team was going to win in one of the six mans, and the other six man, the AAA team was going to win. That was obvious if you use a little bit of logic. My logic, though, was I thought Legado would have the tension and you would push over someone Hijo de Dr. Wagner Jr., so Wagner III, I thought that you would push them over. First off, Pagano, never heard of him. Really over with him. Wagner Jr. was great. Psycho Clown was great. But Legado winning this match with zero tension among Berto and Santos, like I thought there would be, was interesting. I just thoroughly love both of these six man. I'm typically not the big fan of six man matches, but this was wonderful. Very good. We have the at the end of match one where Octagon gets attacked by Dom, and this was great. This sets up match five for later that night. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Match two, I predicted wrong, and I've learned my lesson to never pick against La Primera, Stephanie Vaquer. I'm sorry that I picked against you. I second-guessed you, and I was wrong. You and the you and Lola Vice got the job done. El Cubano, you and Miss Lola Vice got it done, and I second guessed you all, and I shouldn't have. But let me tell you something, Dalice showed up, show why she's been big in Lucha Libre. I never heard of her. I heard of, never heard of Cheek Tormenta until this show, and they told some stories. But what I really liked about this is, like, Conan and Corey Graves did a fantastic job telling the story of these wrestlers. Just the little tiny parts of Cheek Tormenta used to wear a mask, and then she lost it recently in a match earlier. And it's really, and that's what they call, lucha de, I don't speak Spanish. So I'm going to try it. Luchas de apuestas, which is basically is a wager match. It literally means matches with wagers. And so typically it's either mask for mask or hair versus mask type stuff. And that's where she lost her mask at recently. This match was fun. This was great. We got to see the double devil's kiss, which was, that's the highlight of the night. Just is, right? Another good six man after that. You get the fatal four way where Javon tried to kill himself. This was just fun. I told you Ethan Page was going to retain, though. Everyone guessed differently. They're like, no, Javon's going to win, or Phoenix are going to. No. It was Ethan Page. This is all set up. Ethan Page is going to win this match, right? And here's how I know this. He's already, I think, being marketed to defended another time against someone, right? And when they start putting this in NXT storyline, right? You just know that Paul's for a minute. Very good match, right? Very good match. And then you get probably the match of the weekend in El Hijo del Vikingo versus Chad Gable. What a match this was. So there are certain wrestlers on the planet right now that anytime I watch them, my mind goes, this guy can never have a bad match. Gunther's there. This might piss off the casuals. Will Ospreay is there. And Chad Gable's now on that list. Chad Gable does not have a bad match. I think it's impossible for Chad Gable to have a bad match. This main event was absolutely spectacular. This was wonderful, right? I've heard of Vikingo. I've seen him in a couple like clips and stuff, and I've heard good things about him. He showed out here. And here's my favorite thing that I love. There was no interference during these shows, right? JBL was rumored to show up. Thank God he did it, because there was really no reason for that, right? You know, I brought up multiple times, you know, on Tuesday and even yesterday, is Alberto Del Rio going to show up? Is that going to be like the big secret that they have, that they were waiting to debut him till it got to here. And thank God it didn't happen, because I don't think we needed that much. You know, first off, I think that would have overshadowed how great this main event was. But I don't think it's necessary, like, PR that you need it. But this show was just so good. From top to bottom was 2 hours of fantastic entertainment, right? And with that in mind, now we have to move over to Money in the Bank, which already is behind the eight ball as far as you have to live up to this show. And with the card that it had, there was just no way that it could live up to it. So we start this right here. And we start with, surprisingly, we start with the women's. In hindsight, very good call. Very good call to start with the women's. So you have Naomi, Alexa Bliss, Julia, Rhea Ripley, Roxanne Perez, and Stephanie Vaquer. I get to see Stephanie wrestle 3 times in a 20-hour period. Anytime Stephanie Vaquer is on the screen, my eyes are there. My eyes are glued to it. I mean, she wrestled on Monday, too. In the last week, Stephanie Vaquer has wrestled 4 matches. And anytime she's on the screen, I'm at least watching for her, right? I just, you know, in the Discord, people were rating like, oh, this is the hottest, you know, if I'm ranking by looks of these 6. And everyone had like Alexa Bliss or Roxanne Perez at the top, and they're highly disrespecting Stephanie. No. If we're ranking this, let's just go ahead and do it. Stephanie Vaquer is number one. I'm sorry. There's nothing like a Latina princess. A Latina queen. Let's call her a queen. She's not the princess no more. A Latina princess. And that is what Stephanie Vaquer is. She is the... Like, we're looking, like, y'all, I get it. This is preference. This is preference. I get it. Stephanie's at 1, right? Let's just be honest with ourselves. You know, Roxanne's going to be number 2, right? We're just going to be honest. Julia at 3. We're just going to be honest, right? Naomi at 4. We're just going to be honest. Alexa Bliss, to me, is no different than what I say about Liv Morgan. I could find another 8 blonde, seemingly good-looking, shorter women at any bar, at any shopping center. I could find 8 of them down here. This is not saying Alexa Bliss is not attractive. Without a doubt, would smash. Respectfully, right? And then Rhea Ripley's last. And I don't have to go over all of those reasonings again, right? But let's just be honest, right? All this hate I've seen over Stephanie Vaquer is overrated, and I don't understand the appeal, Stephanie, and she's not over yet. She's not, I've even heard of people saying, well, Stephanie Vaquer's not a draw. Guys, we have to think logically here. We have to use the thing that was put in between your ears, right behind your eyes, called your brain. There's one singular reason why Stephanie Vaquer was called up when she was. And that is because she is a draw. There is one singular reason, right? I even heard someone say Julia's a better draw. No. There is one singular reason why they took the title off of Julia and put it on Stephanie Vaquer, made her a double champion. Stephanie Vaquer is the biggest draw in the women's division right now. I hate to say it. It's just the truth. She is the most over with the crowd. Now, my fear is that losing the Booker T element, right? Pat McAfee needs to stop trying to do the because he sounded like a pirate. He was like, ar. Like, bro, shut up, bro. You ruined it. You took me out of the moment. Stop trying to bro, if we could get Pat McAfee off TV today, you know, did not commentary feel so much better at Money in the Bank with three actual good commentators commentating the show, right? I'm kidding. We had Pat McAfee on it, right? We had Pat McAfee on the show, right? So, of course, it didn't sound good. But Wade sound good. Wade was wonderful. Michael Cole was good. But when Michael Cole gets around Pat McAfee, he becomes a little bit immature. You know what would be the perfect booth for pay-per-views? Corey Graves, Wade Barrett, Joe Tessitore. Would be perfect. Would be perfect for me. Like, this is no disrespect to Michael Cole. I like this. I like Michael Cole. I think he's fantastic. I think when we look back at current commentators right now, first off, my opinion is Booker T's the greatest. Current, not of all time, current. If I had to rate them in their current state today, Booker T is at the top of his game. He made Trick Williams. He made Stephanie Vaquer over. Right now, she would have gotten over perfectly fine by herself, but he added a little bit to it. He made the Devil's Kiss feel important and made her a star. Right? Booker T just had, right? Because that's Booker T always gets compared to Pat. Well, you hate Pat McAfee because he does silly things, but Booker, no, but I've already explained this. When Booker does crazy things and he goes, ah, shucky ducky, quack, quack. He does it at moments that are big, and it makes sense, and it adds to the show. Pat McAfee will just sit over here and say random shit where at times he shouldn't speak. And so we got to let it go. We got to let it go, right? But this match, now that we're done talking about the extracurriculars of the match, let's talk about the match itself. This was the safest, most boring match you could get out of these six. This is the best six members you've ever had in a Women's Money in the Bank. And you've done this. This is now the ninth time that you've done a Women's Money in the Bank, which is by in and of itself is crazy. That this is almost a decade old that you've been running the women's version of it, right? But this is the best six competitors you've ever had in the ring at the same time during a Money in the Bank match. And this was the worst, by far, most boring way you could do this, man. This was safe. No one really did much of anything. There were some interesting spots, for sure. The Devil's Kiss on the ladder was interesting in and of itself. It was a good little move. But outside of that, you didn't really have much of anything, right? So, and then we get to the result, because I know, especially in our Discord, there was some anger at Naomi winning. Now, I need to go back about a month. So remember when it's the episode title, Real, Raw, and Relevant, right? That first solo show by myself, and I talked at the very end about the rumors of Naomi winning Money in the Bank. And I did go back because I remember talking about it, and I wanted to go back and see what my opinion, because I'll be honest, when I speak, I'm in a zone right now, right? When I click stop recording here, I get out of that zone and I don't remember anything I say during the podcast, right? I'm gonna be completely honest, because I'm sort of locked in right now, and it's sort of like that adrenaline that you get when like a car is on fire and you need to like lift it up to get someone out or something. It's like that's what I'm in right now, right? So I had to go back and the good thing with Apple Podcasts is that it transcripts the show, so I don't have to listen to it. I can just find what I say and read it, right? That's so much quicker than listening to it. And so I did that, and I was all in favor of Naomi winning. I'll just be completely honest. I was all in favor. This was before Stephanie Vaquer won, by the way. So I think they hadn't even done any of the actual qualifiers at this point yet. And so I was all in on Naomi winning. And I thought it was a good idea. And the reasoning behind it, was that I thought that maybe it could lead to, you know, if Jade gets a match at SummerSlam. So my logic going into this was Jade faces Tiffany, because, you know, remember, sort of in context, what I was saying was that Tiffany didn't have any real competitors. And so what if, you know, she beats Nia and then Jade steps up and gets the match at SummerSlam? This was before we knew King and Queen of the Ring were coming back. And I'll talk about that here in a second. But anyway, that Jade would possibly be getting ready to win this match against Tiffany Stratton. And then Naomi comes out and cashes in, wins the title, steals the moment from Jade, which could then lead to Jade Cargill feuding with Naomi. You know, you could always add in the third element of Bianca, and you can get Naomi versus Bianca versus Jade, and then eventually Naomi versus Bianca. And I thought that there, right at the moment, that was about a month ago. That was about a month ago that I had those thoughts, right? And let me be honest, reading that, I was like, ooh, that didn't age well. Because that's not the greatest story that you could have coming out of this match. Now, I said something in the Discord during the talk about it because I was upset with this finish. Not necessarily because Stephanie lost, which was my prediction that she was going to win. I was leaning towards the idea where everyone else was going that Roxanne was probably realistically going to be the one that won this match. Either her or Julia. And the mindset, and I got to shout her out because she's telling the truth here. Kara in our Discord, the username Kara, heel queen, she's spot on this, right? And I'm gonna my thoughts on the ending of this match has changed probably three times since it ended. At first, my initial reaction was a little bit of like, why are we doing this? Then I started thinking, well, there may be a hint of story here. You know, Jade could win Queen of the Ring, get the match against Tiffany at what's it? It's called at SummerSlam, and blah 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 blah. Right? I just don't think there's a story there for that. I there's a story. It's not the greatest. It's not the greatest way to handle this. But my question then is, if we wanted Naomi in the title picture, why couldn't she win Queen of the Ring? Why, right? And then she got her title match. The idea of Money in the Bank, and this is the point that Kara made in the Discord that ultimately changed my opinion back to my initial thought. This was stupid. This was a waste of a winner. And my opinion is going to seem a little bit out of place considering who won the men's, and this is where I might disagree with a lot of people, because I thought the men's was the right result. Because ultimately, I have two opinions on Money in the Bank, how they should use it, right? So like even someone like Wavy D, I think Wavy D would fall into the category. He thinks it should be like an up-and-comer, right? And I think that's where, if I understand her opinion and her point, this is where Kara would fall as well. Guys, correct me if I'm wrong, right? Is that this should be used for someone who is an up-and-comer to get them into the main event picture. And I do agree with that. Right, some would say, you know, that Money in the Bank has to be someone who's already a draw or an up and comer, right? And so I would disagree with that, at least the draw part. I think that Money in the Bank should be used primarily to as a plot point to tell stories, because it is a prop. And so that's where Seth Rollins comes in again. We'll talk about that in a minute. The number one priority should be you have to tell a story through this. There has to be a storyline to tell this, right? And then number two is it should go, this should be used for someone who hasn't been in the title picture, or there's no way to get them in the title picture, and this is how you elevate them to that title picture, right? The problem, and this is why I've always said for the last couple of years, especially right now, is that this Money in the Bank gimmick, just like I've said on Tuesday, that Elimination Chamber and Royal Rumble as a gimmick, they're kind of, they've run their course, because why would I care about winning Money in the Bank if I could just focus? Why would I put myself in a ladder match when I can just sort of prepare and go through Queen of the Ring, win Queen of the Ring, and go fight the champion at SummerSlam? Why would I do that? Why would I put myself through a grueling ladder match and not just go through some one-on-ones where I can dominate, right? And then if I win that, then I get a title match no matter what. It makes no sense, right? It really makes no sense to run all of these gimmicks at the same time, right? And so I do think we got to retire Money in the Bank as a gimmick. I think it's run its course. You know, Highlander has his opinion it should be like an NXT thing, and I see where he's coming from. This could be a way to elevate NXT superstars. The problem with that is that that would run its course very quickly. Because I'm going to be honest, there's not a lot on a year-to-year basis. There's not that many NXT talent that are ready for the main event scene, right? So let's say, for example, we ran Money in the Bank as a NXT only show. Now, for him, you know, for his sake of his opinion, it would be he wanted that to happen so that Ethan Page would win, right? And I understand the love for Ethan Page and wanting him on the main roster. I get that. Here's my problem with that, right? Ethan Page wins this briefcase. Now what? Oh, he teases John Cena. Or he teases Jey Uso on cashing in. Look, there was a time in January, in February, when The Rock came out and started the soul shit, that I said, oh, that would be interesting. Maybe he adds Ethan Page to it. You debut him, he wins Money in the Bank. There was a point in time 6 months ago where I said Ethan Page should win Money in the Bank. 100%. I'm there, but not as an NXT gimmick. I sold my soul to The Rock, and it's just going to eventually get exposed by me cashing in at SummerSlam. But I now there's a better story at play. Here's the better thing that you could do: just get rid of the gimmick. It's run its course. Because you move it to NXT. Okay, so Ethan Page wins it this year. One, he's not even the most over guy in NXT. Or the most deserving. I just, after 2 or 3 years of doing that, it would run its course. I think we got to get rid of the gimmick, just personally. So Naomi wins this match. And I'm not for this, right? There's a story, I guess, with Jade and Bianca that you could run. But it's not a story like with Seth Rollins, where Seth Rollins was the only logical story within the logic of the story, with what's being told. Seth Rollins was the only legitimate one. We're going to talk about the outrage around that at the end of the show here in a minute, right? Julia Roxanne Perez or Stephanie Vaquer should have won this match, because if you're not going to tell a story with the winner, then it should be somebody who wasn't in the title picture, right? And Rhea Ripley's in the title picture, should have never even been in this match. You know how much more elevating to a star like Maxine Dupri or Ivy Nile or Kairi Sane this opportunity could have been? Think about all the people who lost qualifiers. Now, not necessarily Rhea's qualifier, because Rhea's qualifier, if I remember correctly, had that was Roxanne. Roxanne's had Becky and Natalya in it. Rhea's was the one Zoe Stark got hurt and Kairi Sane lost. That was what it was. But you know, not again, I think this is probably where you could get the NXT aspect into it, is running If anything, it should be two from SmackDown, two from Raw, two from NXT. If anything, if we're going to change up the gimmick a little bit, it should be that. And then you can get an NXT aspect in the show. But Naomi's not the worst pick. I mean, Rhea would have been the worst, 100%. And then Alexa, and then Naomi, right? But it should have been Stephanie, Roxanne, or Julia. Though it should have been one of those, because they, at this current moment, there's no path for them to the title. I do believe Julia or Stephanie Vaquer is winning Money in the Bank, or not Money in the Bank, excuse me, Queen of the Ring. And I do believe that's going to be the finals of Queen in the Ring, is Julia versus Stephanie Vaquer. I do believe that's what it's going to be. At this moment, now they could always change force here and give us Rhea Ripley versus God Charlotte Flair or something, but who knows what that's going to be. I don't know. My question is, what's next? I'm not the biggest fan of Naomi winning this, primarily because she's already been champion. There's really no need for her to be in the title picture. And she's already more so in a storyline with Jade and Bianca, which makes zero sense to feud with her now since she has the briefcase. And it's a clusterfuck, right? And this match was as boring as it started, right? We then get Dominic versus Octagon Jr. for the Intercontinental Championship. This was just to get a AAA superstar in this match. Octagon was a big fan of Rey Mysterio, so there's still that connection. I do think Wavy D is right. At some point, this Dom versus Rey Mysterio feud is going to be hair versus mask at some point. I just don't know when. Not much to really say about this match. This match was kind of useless, I'm going to be honest with you. More of a time killer, right? So, first two matches, not the greatest start to the show, right? In my opinion. We get to match three. We get Becky Lynch versus Lyra Valkyria. Excuse me. Becky versus Lyra. Now, I told you guys, because of the stipulation in this match, Becky Lynch was going to win. Like, this was clear as day that Becky Lynch was going to win this match. But that's not going to stop me from talking about the fact that this was a really, really, really good match. Now, there's going to be some, again, I respect his opinion. JD from NY said that this was probably match of the night. I don't know if I'd go that far. This was a good match. It was serviceable. It did what it needed to do, but we knew that was going to happen, right? First off, Becky Lynch is Becky Lynch. I know there's a lot that who don't feel like she's necessarily top of the game, but she's good. Becky's good, right? Lyra's great. Lyra is a world champion, in my opinion. World championship material, without a doubt. Ultimately, I'm always a what's next person. Becky's now champion. I don't know if she continues against Lyra, because I think the bigger story they wanted to tell is Becky versus Bayley. And we're going into SummerSlam season, being that we have Saudi. As far as I know, the big event in July is Saturday night's main event, July 12th, and then Evolution is the women's pay-per-view July 13th, that weekend, or July 12th as well, I think. I don't remember the dates of that weekend. I think it's July 12th is that Saturday, with Saturday night's main event and Grand American Bash. 13th is the Sunday, which is Evolution, right? If I remember the dates correctly. And so, I think the big feud, the next show after that. So we got Saudi at the end of June. About 2 weeks after that, you got Saturday night's main event and Evolution. And then you have SummerSlam at the beginning of August, and then Paris, Clash at Paris at the end of August, right? So those are the, that's where we're looking in the immediate future and booking. We're booking towards SummerSlam, right? And I think the bigger match, what they want it to get into, is Becky versus Bayley, and getting that story set up for SummerSlam for this title. And so I think Lyra's sort of out of the picture here. Maybe she gets into this Queen of the Ring tournament. And maybe we get a Lyra, a queen Lyra. I'd like a Queen Lyra. Lyra can be my queen whenever. You know, the only other person I would like to be queen would be Stephanie Vaquer. Right, maybe Bianca. You know, there's some tension there with the people that I like. You know, I'd like any of those three picks. Stephanie being number one, but we don't need to play favorites. But this was exactly what I thought was going to happen, right? This was exactly what I thought was going to happen, right? You get that Lyra raising the hand and Becky playing into it, and then Lyra sort of attacking her. And I think this was all what we saw coming out of it. Very good match. Starting to raise my rating, right? At this point, we're probably still sitting at around a 6. It wasn't awful. It was just serviceable, right? Then we get the men's Money in the Bank. Right. And we get Seth Rollins versus Andrade versus a Grande Americano versus LA Knight versus Solo Sikoa. This was a fun match, dude. Like, I know there's going to be some hatred towards the result and a lot of people not liking Seth Rollins winning. I'll express in a minute at the end of this match why I thought that was the only logical way to go. It's why I made the prediction. Right. And by the way, I was the only, well, not the only. Cody also picked Rollins, and I'm going to be honest with you. When he messaged me personally his predictions, I was like, thank you for being a man of logic. And Cody doesn't watch WWE product that often, right, if at all. And so, his first thing was, hey, man, I don't watch the product. This is just sort of what sounded good to me. And I messaged him back, and I was like, you're literally the only person in the Discord who participates in the bracket predictions that picked Rollins out other than me. And I said, thank you for using actual logic. You don't know the story, but there's a story going to be told with this match. Right. And, you know, I respect y'all's opinion, but this idea that El Grande Americano is going to win is absolutely insane. He was never going to win this match. You know, Andrade was never going to win. Penta, as much as I understand why, you know, you would want to pick Penta, he is mad over with the crowd. But I do believe that he's going to rejoin his brother. They're going to form the Lucha Brothers, and he's going in the tag division. And then Solo was never going to win because there was a bigger and deeper. This match was my favorite of the night for one reason. Stories came out of it. This is what I'm talking about. With pay-per-views serve two purposes, and they have to do both. The first purpose is you end the current storyline, or right, and you begin the new one, right? Because this is season finale, right? If you use my analogy, PLEs, pay-per-views, they're season finales, right? And so you have to end the current storylines or end or progress the current storylines. And then if you're going to end one, you have to pick up the new one. Again, it's the what's next, right? Because wrestling is the never-ending soap opera. And so there's always got to be that next storyline, right? And so someone like a Solo Sikoa, first off, let's talk about him. His performance in this match, not from an X's and O's in-ring wrestling technique ability, but his performance as far as this is what I always talk about with people, like the X's and O's, they matter a little bit, but they're not of main importance, because Solo Sikoa was great in other areas where and that is, he's funny, dude. When you allow Solo to show a little bit of charisma, this dude's great. And this is what I saw in NXT, that when he got caught up, I told everyone 2024 is the year of Solo. And I was right. And everyone was like, oh, Solo's not it. He's boring. No. He was boring in his character as right-hand man, security enforcer, right? But if you allow this dude to show a little bit of charisma, like he's going to do against Jacob, Solo Sikoa is absolutely fantastic. He was funny. I'm going to be honest with you. He was performer of the night for me. He was performer of the night. The mimicking everyone's motions, just the ability to tell a story in the ring with facial expressions and being in the moment, right? Solo Sikoa was him, right? Penta, he's all right. But Penta was in there for one reason and one reason alone. One reason. You're in L.A. That's the honorable mention, right? So the Hispanic crowd's going to want someone to cheer for. And that's why you put someone like Andrade and Penta in there. But they're also in there because they're the, for lack of a better term, they're the spot monkeys. El Grande Americano's in there as the heel. And there's right, and I'm not necessarily the biggest fan of him being in there in the match, 100%. I think AJ Styles should have won that. And you could probably build something with AJ, but I think we're going to build Punk versus AJ Styles for SummerSlam. That's just my personal prediction. But if you start going down the people in the match, LA Knight was in there and he had a realistic chance, and then Seth Rollins. But let's talk about LA Knight for a minute, because everyone and their mother wanted LA Knight to win this match. And everyone and their mother was saying, oh, they're in LA. LA Knight's going to win. This is his city. Blah, blah. Guys, you do realize that LA Knight is from fucking Maryland. Right? He's booked from Maryland. Right? Like, right, but we also got to think realistically, and I'm not going to use age as a factor here, because I think every person in this match is closer to 40 than they are 30. Like maybe outside of Andrade. Andrade's 35. I know Chad Gable's 39. Penta's in his 40s. LA Knight's obviously in his 40s. Seth Rollins is getting up there. Solo's getting up there, right? These are older people. So age to me is not a factor. LA Knight doesn't have a story. And then all these people are like, oh, he's going to win and he's going to cash in on John Cena. I don't mean to be rude when I say this, but I really need you to think for a minute. Again, use the gray matter between your ears and behind your eyes that was created with a purpose. Use that for a minute. LA Knight's going to cash in on John Cena? Does that make realistic sense? Does that make sense in canon in the story? No. There's one logical winner in this match. And I'm so glad they told a story out of this, right? That's Seth Rollins. Now, I thought they start, and so my sort of secret prediction of Seth Rollins or the winner of the men's cashing in during LA Knight Logan Paul, John Cena versus Jay and Cody. It really hinged upon where the placement of the men's Money in the Bank match was. When I realized that the men weren't starting, because I had a feeling that they were either going to main event with the women or they were going to main event with Cena. Main eventing with Cena probably was the best choice. I'm going to be 100% honest with you. But because the men didn't start the night, I had a feeling a cash-in probably wasn't going to happen. And so I immediately went to, okay, this is probably going to happen on Monday if it goes the way I would book it. Have Jay get the shit beat out of him, somehow survive, and Seth Rollins comes out and cashes in. You could even run something where the match doesn't technically end. You can have Gunther and his Gunther get attacked by the goons, cause a DQ, right? Jay's already been brutalized by Gunther. The goons get Gunther out of the way, right? The goons then go and attack Jay some more. Seth comes out with the case, cash in. Seth Rollins wins the match. The problem is you're probably going to have a CM Punk or Sami Zayn interruption. And so, you know, Monday is going to be interesting. Tomorrow night is going to be interesting. But we got to be logical, man. And I'm so glad they went the logical storyline route. That's what made this match so fun. It wasn't the flips and the ladder spots. On that note, I meant to mention this with the women. Bro, we got to do something. We got to train these women how to use a ladder. Because there was a couple spots in here where, like, they were trying to move ladders. And Julia and Roxanne particularly where they were trying to, like, smash Rhea with the ladder. But Roxanne didn't realize that it was locked. Like, I know you're in a moment, but, like, can we train these people, like, practice these spots to make sure that, you know, you're not looking a little bit slow on TV? But, man, this men's match was fun, and you know why it was fun? Because there was storyline, right? So Seth Rollins comes out, and he's calling his goons in, the Bronze, right? Bron Breakker, Bronson Reed. They get coming down to the ring. They clear everyone out. They then go and try to attack Solo. And as that's happening, Jacob Fatu and JC Mateo come down. And they wreck house. Jacob Fatu's, you know, he's playing guard as Solo's climbing the ladder. And then you get that look. And Jacob grabs Solo's ankle. You know, Friday night he overheard. He's all gas, no brains. And he heard it, right? And then Saturday night, he's grabbing his ankle. He's staring up at Solo, and he says, "I hate you, Solo. Solo, I hate you." Words that'll be echoed around the WWE universe. And Solo gets his ass kicked by Jacob. We set up a beautiful match. One of my favorite moments of this PLE was this right here, because this was cinema. This was perfect. This was great. This is raising my rating just a little bit, right? It's going to be really hard to get past Dom and them and Lyra losing, even though I knew it was coming, and it wasn't even that great of a match in my opinion. But if I had to add that in there, right? I mean, after match three, you know, we're over halfway through the show with the women's Money in the Bank, Dom's useless match. Lyra and Becky was serviceable but wasn't great. You know, I'm sitting at like a 5 or a 6, and Jacob comes out. And the match itself wasn't anything spectacular to me. It was a lot of just the individual aspects of Solo did a good job. Jacob did a good job, right? And this was fun and entertaining. And so now you're raising it up a little bit. And Seth Rollins wins. This was fun. That's what this was. This was fun. Right? This was a fun match. And the right person won. I know all these LA Knight fans are going to sit here. Oh, why is Triple H only see him as mid? Because that's all he is. All he is mid-card. How many times do I got to tell you this, right? There comes this time, like, there's an uprising like every like 6 months with LA Knight, where the LA Knight marks, they come out and they come in full force and they're like, we got to push them to the champion. Guys, it's all about timing in wrestling a lot of the times, right? And unfortunately, LA Knight is in a men's roster where the last time he got hot, Roman was in the middle of his title run. Wasn't going to drop it to LA Knight. And now you got John Cena and the title. Again, the idea that you thought that LA Knight was going to cash in on John Cena was absolutely insane to me. And the idea that you're going to give LA Knight the briefcase, have him hold it till the end of the year, and not cash in, but then cash in on whoever new wins the title, is absolutely insane. Outside of the fact that SmackDown already has one of the briefcases, so logically a Raw superstar needs the briefcase. I just don't understand where anyone thought it. LA Knight was the last person I thought was going to win. Not the last. Andrade was the last. I was between either Solo or Seth Rollins in my predictions. But then I recognized that Solo was in a story. And so to remain consistent with what I said about Naomi, right? I didn't think so, right? The story was Seth Rollins. That's the story I told you guys. I've been saying since Mania, the long-term play story here is Seth Rollins winning the title and ultimately losing it to Sami Zayn. I think that's the long-term play. And whether Jay holds the title through Monday, or if he loses it at SummerSlam, or when it gets cashed in on, I want it sooner than later. I do kind of agree it's probably going to be at SummerSlam, right? If it doesn't happen tomorrow night after his match with Gunther, it's going to happen at SummerSlam or after, right? I do agree with that. I don't know where anyone else thought anyone but Seth. Like, I'm really surprised that anyone thought, or that everyone thought Seth Rollins wasn't winning this. There's no purpose to have him in the match if Seth Rollins isn't going to win this. Right? Let's just be honest with ourselves. We just got to be honest, right? So then we get to the main event. Cody Rhodes, Jey Uso versus John Cena, Logan Paul. I'm going to be honest. The match was okay. Wasn't my favorite. It was a standard main event John Cena style match, right? You know, Logan Paul, for the first time I've ever seen him doing the buckshot, he pulled a Hangman Page and slipped off the ropes, which was fine. You know, the drone shot of him being suplexed was fine. Adding in Jey Uso splashing him without letting us know Jey Uso was splashing him was kind of awkward and watching. I should have figured something like this was happening. And so we're not going to actually talk about the match because the match has nothing really to talk about. How we're going to end this show is the same way the show ended last night. And that's our truth. And we're going to have this conversation. This is the conversation that, you know, we're an hour into this show now. This is the conversation that everyone needs to have. And the conversation was, did we just get worked? And I am what seems like the minority that is going to sit here and say, we got worked. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say this was always going to be my opinion, right? One of the reasons why I wanted to wait to talk about our truth, and I know I discussed him on, what was it, Tuesday? Was it Tuesday or Friday? Last Friday. That I talked about truth. I think it was Tuesday because, no. Pause for a minute. It was Tuesday. Yeah, it was Tuesday because I talked about truth and I talked about the rumors of Mariah May. The reason that I waited longer than most people to react to it was, I'm going to be honest, and you guys can say I'm lying to you. In my mind, when I read what the thing last weekend, when R-Truth said my contract is not going to be renewed, everyone's first instinct was, this is a joke. This is part of his gimmick. He thinks it's April Fool's Day because it's June 1st and not April 1st. And then things started to be reported by Sean Ross Sapp and Fightful and all these other dirt sheets that, no, this is true. We trust us, bro. We got sources, but we're not going to name them, but just trust us. And let me pay me $7 to feed you information that may or may not be accurate at all. Right. And everyone was out here saying, no, this is legitimate. The roster's out here tweeting. Everyone's responding to it, acting like it's the end of the world. Oh, this is the downfall of WWE. And in the back of my mind, and I didn't say this because this is coming from We Too Deep. I'm one of the last people ever to try to sit and say something is a work, because it does. The problem with saying it's a work is that it's sort of like the boy who cried wolf. We've said it so many times and it's been proven wrong so many times, things that we think is a work, right? AEW fans say it all the time. Oh, the CM Punk stuff is a work. They're working you. And then we find out that we're not being worked. And so saying something is a work is almost like crying wolf. Most people in the IWC think everything is a work. But when you're actively being worked, now all of a sudden it's not a work. Guys, come on now. This was clearly a work. And everyone's out here saying, well, his son, R-Truth's son, spoke out and said, oh, no cap, bro, stop the cap. And Sean Ross Sapp's out here saying, there's no one backstage that's given me any inclination that it's a work. Guys, you think they're going to shoot on you now and tell you that you're not being worked? These people don't have brains, man. I swear they don't know how to logically think. Oh, but the roster, man, the roster was tweeting support. Yeah, probably because they weren't in the know and they also got worked. Oh, but Carlito and Valhalla. Okay, so you use real life people who you're not going to bring back to play up the work of that you're working on. Look, if it comes out that this wasn't a work, I'll admit that I'm wrong. I hardly say things are works, though. This is a work without a doubt. And you got guys like JD who spent like 7 minutes on his podcast. Why would you want it to be a work? JD, why do I want it to be a work? Because we finally got fucking surprised for once. Did anyone and their mother expect R-Truth to show up in this match? Eric Bischoff did. He called this out. Eric Bischoff was the first person to say this was a work, and he said it a week ago. Oh, this is a work. Right? But now we have all these dirt sheets. We have Sean Ross Sapp. We have all these content creators like JD. And again, I respect these guys. I respect JD's opinion, right? But all of them, they got to pretend like, oh, we the people made a movement. We want truth movement. No, there was no we want truth movement. That's what they wanted. Someone tweeted, for the first time since the Yes Movement. Guys, I'm going to hate to break you even more. The extent of the Yes Movement was worked. Like, I don't believe the Yes Movement started as a work, but I think once it started to catch on, WWE worked it into the programming, right? The hijacking of the show and taking over. The guys, this was all a work. The Yes Movement was a work. The R-Truth Movement, the We Want Truth Movement, it was a work. You got played. Let your ego die. Let go of your pride and just admit that you got played. And that's what you should want as a pro wrestling fan. You know how fucking great it felt last night? That for the first time Since Triple H took over being head booker, the thought crossed my mind, they got us. They got us. We were so invested in this. They let Truth go, right? Why would they let Truth go? And even I, as someone who has said that I'm okay with him leaving and not coming back from a business perspective. But right, even I, like, even those people got worked. And you know why I'm okay being worked? Because people out there, why would you want to be worked? Why you did this? Why would you want to be worked? Why do I want it to be? Why do I want to be worked? Because that means that you're at least trying to be creative. Oh, but Fightful and Sean Ross Sapp and PW Insider and all the nerds in the wrestling journalism, they're saying that this deal came back in the last 72 hours and Triple H tried to call R-Truth and he didn't answer. Nick Khan had to get on the phone. Come on, guys. What have I been saying for the longest time? Triple H hates the dirt sheets. And he worked all of them. And now they got to cover ass. And they none of them want to ever be wrong. And so now they got to say, oh, no, this is clearly, this clearly came to be, you know, they realized that they fucked up. And they heard the response. And they realized that they messed this thing up. No. You got worked. And we finally got surprised for the first time. Guys, I think everyone and their mother thought, who the fuck is this person attacking John Cena? I think everyone thought that maybe the, because I jumped up thinking the cash-in was going to happen. I thought it was Braun Breaker, right? And I'm going to, my instant reaction, I'm going to be honest with you, right? As they sort of panned in and the dude was throwing haymakers on Cena, I was like, who is this black dude? Because that's not Braun Breaker. I don't think he has that color spray tan. I'm like, that's a black dude attacking John Cena. R-Truth, again, still not crossing my mind, because as a director, as a creative team, they put in your mind for a week straight, R-Truth is not here. So no one's thinking R-Truth. And then they pull back and say, gotcha, bitch. And it's R-Truth. And you got worked. And I got worked. And the dirt sheets got worked. And the roster got worked. It is what it is. We got surprised for the first, y'all are so, you guys want so bad to be so involved as the IWC, that everyone who made a tweet and everyone who chanted and everyone who made a sign, you guys did, no, you did nothing. You did nothing. This moment was great because you got worked. If you take away the, right, and this is why I hate people who get so invested and why I try not to get so invested in the backstage contract drama. Because Kara made a great point. And I'll call her. She makes some great points, right? She's one of the few. And this is why I love my community, because most of the people in my community, most of the people in this community, you guys, the listeners here of the Slapping Me Wrestling podcast, you guys like to think with your brain sometimes. Kara made a great point in the Discord. R-Truth was never formally announced, and you would figure that WWE would have given him some sort of send off if they weren't going to renew them, right? Because there's this argument being used, well, if they worked you, why would you have them get squashed by JT Mateo on a SmackDown after he loses to Cena at Saturday night's main event just to release him? Why? So you nerds would complain more because they're working you. Let go of your pride and just admit you got. But everyone wants to be right. Everyone wants to think that the fans actually have a say in the programming. Everyone wants to feel like they're important. Guys, breaking news, you're not that important. They're telling stories. And this is the thing with Triple H. For the first time this year in 2025, Triple H had me say, that's creative. You did something good here, Triple H. How many times have I sung the praise of Triple H this year? Let's extend the period of time. How many times have I sung the praise of Triple H in the last 2 years? Very often, right? No, not at all. Very minimal, very sparingly has Triple H impressed me as head booker, going all the way back to him running NXT. This was creative. This was the director getting you invested and pulling the plug right out of it and said, I got you in my hands. More of this, Triple H. More of this. And this very same people who podcasted last week, oh, this is the downfall of WWE. I can't wait to see y'all's response to this. We did it, guys. We did. We brought them back. No, no, no. You got. You got worked. You got worked. The fans got worked. The roster got worked. But they had, you can't tell the roster guys it's just a story. Why? Because you need the roster being upset about truth not being renewed. You need the podcasters. You need the people who work for the show. You need the networks thinking that you guys don't care about this. Right? You need everyone involved, right? You need it, Rhea Ripley tweeting out about truth, and you need it, Dom tweeting out about truth, and you need it, all the roster tweeting about truth. You needed to act with Miz and Gunther that maybe some solidarity with truth, and so we're going to delete all the mentions of WWE because we're not. And you needed all of that to convince the sheep in the IWC that this thing might be real, that truth is gone, so that you could then lay the grounds to pull all of that out from underneath of you and to say, we got you. Truth is never gone. He was never fully announced as released. Even if they aren't going to pick up contracts, you would think with someone like R-Truth that they would thank him for his service. He was never removed off the active roster. Y'all want to sit here and try to act like you're that damn important. That you can form some sort of people power, baby. Power to the people. No. You got worked. Lay down your pride. Drop the ego for a minute. And just admit you got worked. And enjoy the show. Enjoy the show. Because I know I did. This was fun. The last two matches of this night was fun. And it raised my rating. I'd give this like a 7. I give this like a 7. This was a 7 show, 7 out of 10. It was a really good show. The best PLE of the year by far from WWE. The thing being talked about now is R-Truth, which is what they want. Where we go from here, I don't know. I think we got to have that question, that conversation. Where does the story go from here? Are we going Truth and Cena again? Is Truth, you know, well, it's not Truth anymore. I guess he's going by Ron Killings. Is this long-term thing? Did he sign? Is his contract still renewing or being, or excuse me, expiring? Is he there long-term? What's the plan? I don't really think that, to me, that doesn't really matter. I more care so, like, what's the storyline going to be? And this, is he going to fight Cena? Are we going to get a match Cena versus R-Truth, Ron Killings? I know the promos will probably be banger. And so I'm going to watch. I'm intrigued. I'm going to tell you something. SmackDown might be something that I watch again, because I know last Friday they had somewhat of a banger SmackDown. Heard some good things about it. So we'll tune in this Friday. But overall, this was a fun day of wrestling. I would say Worlds Collide was a little bit more entertaining of a show. I think especially the last two matches of Money in the Bank really stole it for me. But that the match of the entire day would be Vikingo versus Chad Gable. And I think I'm going to say it, Solo Sikoa was performer of the night, or performer of the day, best performer. I think most over was Mr. Iguana. He, you know, made some new fans. We'll see how long they stay. I think that gimmick could get tiring constantly seeing it. I know a match with him and the Iguana, I don't remember its name, versus Santino Marella. That needs Triple Mania, bruh. Needs to be Mr. Iguana versus Santino, TNA collab with Triple Mania, and the Snake and the Iguana need to face off. That would be fun. You can maybe borrow Luchasaurus and we have the Battle of the Reptiles. I'm kidding. but yeah, that's the review, man. That's the review. I thought this was a decent show. So, you know, a lot of storyline coming out of Men's Money in the Bank. Not so much from the women's side. We'll see where that goes. Intriguing indeed, though. Thank you all for listening. Like, share, subscribe. If you're watching on YouTube, tell me what you feel in the comments. That's how we get in the algorithm. That tells YouTube, hey, we like this We Too Deep guy. I think you should listen to it. Hit the like button, hit the subscribe button. I think we're about 30 away from 200 subscribers, which isn't a lot, but it's something. We got to start somewhere. Also, don't forget to watch on Thursday nights as James and Cody give us some intriguing thoughts on AEW's programming that I can't give you because I don't watch AEW's programming. That's on the Junkyard Media Group YouTube page as well. Subscribe there as well. They're on it trying to get to their first 100 subscribers. And if anyone has money and wants to donate to pay me to... No, I'm kidding. I mean, I'm not even kidding. I would do this full time. You know, if I had the money, I would do this 5 days a week like everyone else does. Live streaming, live reacting to shows. But hopefully that's down the future. We got to start somewhere. I appreciate all of you who listen. My day ones, honestly, from the bottom of my soul, dog, like, I truly appreciate y'all. I started this as the idea of no one's probably going to listen to me talk and blabber. And we got some cool people in this community. If you're new here, don't forget to join the Discord. We would love to conversate with you. Talk about some wrestling. Hope you guys enjoyed this. Let me know what you think, what you thought of Money in the Bank. You know, I made a joke saying it was going to be money in the boredom. And to be honest, for the first three matches, it was living up to that billing. But when you tell me some story and you surprise me, you got me, bro. I'm here for life. That's what I want. I want to be surprised. I want great storytelling. And we got that with the last two matches. So I can't ask for more with that ending. It ended better than it started. Everyone was like, oh, Dwayne's mom is there. Dwayne didn't show up, thank God. But, yeah, that's Money in the Bank. I will be here Tuesday. Tuesday show is going to be a little bit different than what I had originally planned, because I was going to do this on Tuesday. But we will break down Monday Night Raw. We'll, of course, have a beginning thought. We'll figure something out as we plan the show for Tuesday, but we will definitely be here. Talk about Monday Night Raw, definitely. From Phoenix, we got Nikki Bella showing up. I don't know about you. I'm going to be honest with you, because I know he's going to watch this. When they announced Nikki Bella, my response was, all right, Nikki Bella. And then in my head, I was like, oh, Wavy D's probably cussing the TV out right now. But this is, be honest, they're in Phoenix. Nikki Bella's from Arizona. It makes a lot of sense. I'd be more surprised if Bree showed up. But also, this makes a lot of sense, seeing that the next big thing for the women after Saudi, because I don't know if we're going to have a lot of women participation in Saudi this year, being that Evolution's two weeks after. So we'll probably get Queen of the Ring, and that'll be about it, because you got the whole women's show. So you're building towards Evolution with the women, and so you'll probably get some legends. You'll get Nikki. I think Saraya will be there for that. I think that's going to be a big surprise. Saraya, and I think the biggest surprise of the whole pay-per-view will be AJ Lee. That's my prediction. That's part of the reason why I want to be in Atlanta. It's 4 hours away from me, but I can't afford those tickets. So anyone got cheap tickets that are in a decent area, I'll buy them from you. But, you know, it is what it is. I'm kidding. I'm not going to Atlanta that weekend, because Beyonce is going to be there. The MLB All-Star Game's in Atlanta. There's a lot going on in Atlanta that weekend. So I'm staying the hell away, because Atlanta's already a cluster when it comes to traffic. But that's going to be a great event. But I'm blabbering now, so I'm going to let y'all enjoy the rest of your Sunday. I'm going to go find something to eat. And we will end it here. Thanks again for watching. Like, share, subscribe. Tell your friends. Tell the people you see on the street. You know, if you want some merch, I always say you're not forced to buy some. You may never get it, because I still haven't gotten mine yet. And but that's slappingmeatwrestling.com. That's slappingmeatwrestling.com. Thank you all again. I definitely appreciate you. Until then, I will see you on Tuesday. This is Way Too Deep with the Slapping Me Wrestling Podcast. Have a great rest of your day. So hit that subscribe, come along for the ride. AEWWE, we're always on side. From fantasy booking to baddies that slay. Slapping Me Wrestling every Tuesday.